Welcome. I'm Halcyon, and this is Hug Nation. Today the topic is the art of asking. I have been listening to Amanda Palmer's Art of Asking book, and it is fantastic. There are so many parts about it that have been affecting me and have been opening my eyes and educating me. And if you're not familiar with Amanda Palmer, she is a musician. Her original band was the Dresden Dolls, and now she has a solo things that she does. And she got very famous, maybe not famous, but she got a lot of press. Maybe it was a year, two, 3 years ago when she did a Kickstarter campaign to fund her album and raised over $1 million, which is the first time a musician had done that. And it really kind of blew open the whole potential for a artist to self-publish on a grand scale and bypass, you know, record labels and things like that. But she used her kind of core audience as a way to, you know, do big things in the world. And there was a bunch of controversy after it happened. A lot of people who didn't know who she was and didn't kind of know how long she'd been building up her audience and how much effort she had been put into, you know, building this relationship with her fans were like, what the hell? Some, like, you know, chick who sings and gets naked on stage every once in a while just, like, begs for $1 million? Why does she deserve $1 million? And I'm really glad I read the book because it really goes into the whole process and how she, you know, she wasn't asking for $1 million to be paid. She wasn't begging for $1 million. She was saying, I want to create this project. Here are the things you can get, everything from, you know, a digital download for $1 all the way up to, you know, a private performance at your house and all these things. And you buy a product that then she creates. It was definitely not I don't want to work, so give me some money, which sometimes Kickstarters and GoFundMes fall into that category, which I'm not critiquing those things. I'm just saying that this circumstance was one in which she was definitely trying to create a business model that simply allowed people to pre-order, pay for things, so then she could produce the things. She ended up actually paying for it herself and then being reimbursed, but that's kind of neither here nor there. And so there's a lot of backlash about, you know, who does she think she is? And then this even bigger backlash happened because as she was touring, one thing she's done through the years is as they go to new cities, she will put out a call to her fans and say, does anybody want to join us on stage? Any horn players or things like that? And she'll invite them to come up on stage, you know, meet them, play with the band, get free tickets for their friends, swag, hugs and love. And there was a letter that went viral from a professional musician saying, like, how dare you? You know, you make $1 million and then you go and ask other artists to give away your talents, you know, and you're what's wrong with the system. This is why so many artists are broke and everyone's trying to, you know, compete to work for free. And you of all people should know that. And she was like, whoa, like I do pay my touring musicians. They're on salary. You know, I do pay everyone in my team. I do pay all these things, but you know, this is this cool way that we open up and make this option to kind of make this artistic creative community experience broader, and people love it. Nobody who was up on stage was complaining they didn't get paid. There were people that said, I saw your invitation, I don't want to do it because I'm a professional. And she's like, that's cool. That's not what I was really asking for. I was giving people an opportunity. So she got slammed. She got tons of vicious responses. And it's in the last week, as I've been mentioning that I've been reading this, a few people have been like, ooh, like, She certainly is kind of controversial, and I didn't really understand the depth of people's anger towards her, and didn't really understand the depth of the misunderstanding or the misdirected anger, I believe, after reading her side of the story, especially when she's like, you know what, if I would have offered the places on stage as a Kickstarter perk, it would have been totally different. There was another band, I think Stereophonic Spree or something like that, that did that. They did a fundraiser where they said, you know, for whatever, $1,000, you can join us on stage. And no one complained about that. But there's something about the gifting and asking and free that messes with people's heads a little bit. So the book goes through a lot of her experiences and a lot of her relationships with gifting. And there was, not gifting, excuse me, asking. But they're so tied, connected. There's so many overlaps. But it's the differences between the two that has really been kind of like hitting me. Because I have been very much in a float more, steer less mentality for most of the last 10 years. You know, I have not been so much of a seeker as one who is allowing opportunities to float to me, or might find my life to be floated to an opportunity, looking for the open doors and walking through them instead of pounding on doors. I am not one who is known for hustle. You know, I'm not a Gary Vee disciple. I'm like, you know, make it work. You know, second place is the first person to lose. I mean, that's just not how I'm wired. And it's probably, you know, why there are 18 people live for me and people that have been doing this for much less time have much bigger audiences. But that's why it was so interesting and so fun to listen to this thing about Amanda Palmer, because before this $1 million, she did not have a massive audience. In fact, when she had a record label, she put out this album, and in the first week or so, I think it sold 25,000 copies. And she and her band were like, yeah, right on, 25,000 people bought her album. And the record label was so frustrated with those numbers that they shut down marketing and they stopped promoting and started a whole fight with her and Amanda, where Amanda was trying to get out of her contract. But to her, like, a small number of dedicated people that she can build a relationship with and gradually grow and have their friends tell their friends, and she can kind of earn their respect, and that's exactly all that they've ever done. And so as I'm listening to this and being like, trying to figure out what are the things I can learn and what are the things that, like, okay, cool, I'm doing that. Oh man, I need to do that, or I'll never be able to do that. But one of the really interesting things that she concludes or kind of reminds the people, the haters about the $1 million and stuff, is the number of people that raised $1 million was close to 25,000. So this number that the record label thought was not enough fans was exactly the number to raise this massive amount of money. I mean, massive, but I'll say massive. And so it kind of changes the whole perspective on the grandiosity, the magnitude, the fan base required to be successful, even traditionally successful. Because Amanda Palmer, I would say, is successful now. Maybe she's always been. Actually, I'll say from the quote-unquote non-quoted heart successful, she's been successful for as long as she's been authentic, which has been always. But even in traditional successful terms, she is now able to bring in enough resources to do whatever she wants to do. And with not a massive amount of the population. Sometimes I think to myself, I'm like, well, you know, the only people I really respond and resonate with what I'm doing are burners, you know, and that's just like not a big enough audience to make a living from. Not from. If you were a burner and you took that the wrong way, what I mean is, in recent months and maybe years, I've been more and more like trying to push myself to be of service to the world from a Burning Man influenced place. And then that hasn't been feeling as authentic as being dedicated to Burning Man and the Ten Principles kind of almost exclusively. That's the majority of what I'm focused on, and then integrating that into the default world as opposed to kind of taking that as a spice that I put on top of the default world. I'm not sure if I'm explaining that well, but one of the reasons why I've been pushing myself to do that is because I have had this story that there's just not enough burners in the world to sustain somebody who makes YouTube videos about Burning Man. Maybe that's a little bit of a limited explanation of what I do in the world. But perhaps if 25,000 people can support someone like Amanda Palmer, perhaps I'm misguided. There was this idea of the 1,000 fans idea that really kind of pushed the Kickstarter whole movement and the crowdsourcing and crowdfunding movement, which is that, you know, if you have 1,000 true fans, if you're 1,000 people that will give you $100 a year, I'm no mathematician, but that's like $100,000. And that becomes a much more realistic business plan for a non-mainstream, non-pop, non-super popular artist, which who has a team of, you know, marketers and a business behind what they do. You know, an individual or a band can build up their fan base. And the other thing that as she was talking, and she talks a lot about the, you know, imposter syndrome, what she calls the fraud police, that feeling of like, I don't know what I'm doing. Any day now, someone's going to say, who are you to get up on stage and sing? You know, who are you to? And that's something that, as she, I think, rightfully says, that is something that all people, especially artists, go through that sometimes. And, and she goes through this process of really kind of coming to peace with what she has to offer in the world. And that's something that I feel like I've been doing lately as well, that no matter what the, you know, if I let go of some story or if I let go of comparison, if I can focus on, you know, individual people that I've touched and the stories that I get from people saying, hey, you know what you do matters, I feel like I bring value to the world. I don't know exactly how to monetize it. I don't know exactly how to define it in a way that lets people like my dad quantify it, but I feel like I bring value to the world. I'm at peace with that. I do not feel guilty that I don't have a paycheck right now. However, I am realizing, partially through this book, that some of this float more, steer less mentality that I've had is anchored in a defense mechanism. It sounds like groovy Zen and Taoist, man. Hey, man, whatever. But it also allows me to avoid failure and avoid being turned down, avoid rejection. That's the difference between gifting and asking. Asking has the added possibility of someone saying no. And that is something that I know how big of a challenge that is for me and what a big obstacle it is for me in terms of getting to places in my life that probably would be beautiful for myself and beautiful for my relationship and my gifts and my whole purpose and path. I remember after college or the first couple jobs I had, there was people in my office, a number of them that had all worked at this place like Cutco Knives, and they went door to door selling knives. And whether it was selling knives or and Amanda Palmer was actually a performance artist who would do a living statue busking in, you know, in public places. But having some sort of life experiences that gets you really familiar with rejection, really comfortable with rejection, is so incredibly valuable. I have yet to build up my tough skin around that. I have not had enough doors slammed in my face so that as rejection is a possibility, I don't still get the tightness and fear. And so rather than build up the muscles around that soft, scary place, I bypass it. Gift it. Give it away. Give it away. Give it away. There is no danger in that. But it's not the most sustainable system. You know, since I left my job a year and a half ago, I kind of made a commitment to myself to say yes to things. If people ask me to speak, yes. You know, I developed a little bit of savings, and I'll live off that and just have faith that something will happen. But, and I'm grateful for everything I've said yes to. But this last week, as I'm listening to this book about asking, I also had several people confront me with, when I told them all the places that I was speaking over the next couple months, they're like, are those all paid gigs? And I'm like, a couple of them are. And some of the criticism and some of the judgment I got was pretty harsh from people that I care about what they think. And there's more to it, I think, than just like, I need money. Some of it is about energy. Some of it about respect. You know, like when I did some free coaching last year, I said, hey, you know, I'm going to take the first blank number of people. I don't remember how many it was, but and I'll free coaching sessions. If you'd like to talk one-on-one with me, I would love to do that and just kind of feel it out and see how much I enjoy it and see how helpful you think it is. And actually, I think I did like six sessions and two of the six people canceled. I'm like, would you have canceled if it cost money? Probably not. But it's free. You don't value it. And it's easy to not respect it. So there is that aspect to it that that I think I need to integrate in some way. And the other thing is that, you know, like people always ask me, oh, you make YouTube videos, so do you make money doing that? And no, partially because, well, I didn't check the box saying, would you like to monetize your videos? Because I don't get enough views for the dollar amount to be worth the cost of the experience. Meaning, if you want to watch one of my videos, you're not going to see a pre-roll ad because I don't have that box checked. Now, to force everyone who watches the video to watch an ad so that I can get $10 a month just doesn't seem like it's worth it. But in other situations, the dollar versus the free versus gift affects the joy of giving and getting. Like the same, like part of it is just mentality. Like at Burning Man with a theme camp, when you feel like you're paying to get something, then the dynamic is such that you're like, oh, the food sucked. You know, or it's like, well, No, you didn't pay to get food. You paid to be a part of this thing, and you were gifted food as part of the whole dynamic. Need to find a way, which Amanda Palmer has done beautifully, of like, I want to gift my music, and I want to give you the opportunity to gift me back, or not even back, just like, I want you to be able to be a part of this art creation. If you want to help me, facilitate, if you want to enable me to produce, here's all these ways that you can do it. And the whole point of the book is that people want to, not everyone, but I know that I feel that way. If I think someone's doing awesome things in the world and I have the ability, they ask for help on a Kickstarter. If I like what they're doing, if I like them, yes, I want to help them. Not from like a, oh gosh, this poor panhandler, but like, quick, I want to be a part of this. I want to feel good that I am gifting to them. Of all people, I should get that. So I don't know where this is headed for me. I think that that I do need to figure out a way. You know, like I was at Bequinox and somebody came up and was saying, thank you for all these things. And they said, do you have a Patreon? Like a Patreon is an account, like people can pledge money per video or per month. And they're like, you know, how can I contribute to your church? And I was like, And actually, I have a Patreon page ready to hit launch on that I've been afraid. Because in some ways, having no Patreon page is a lot less scary to me than having one and getting like $3 a month. That to me, then I feel like I failed. Whereas, what is that, you know? The lesson, if you keep failing, the lesson is don't try. So if you are watching this going like, yeah, give us a way to contribute and help. Well, you know, Facebook has a Facebook pay button. If you'd like to throw a couple dollars in the digital hat, you can do so as we speak in this moment right now. And I will be grateful, but I will be producing the videos either way at this point. I have 1,000+ videos on YouTube, and it's so hard for me to go, maybe I should take some of them down. Maybe I should make some of them only for people that support my Patreon. Maybe I should make a product and then sell it. I mean, like, you know, a training session or something like that, because I really don't want to have a wall between what I'm inspired to create and those that want to check it out. But maybe I need to figure out what that dynamic is so that we can feel like we are helping one another, so that people can value it a little bit more, so that I can be able to go to my dad and say, no, dude, I am successful in a way that you can understand. And it's just crazy because in a spiritual, intellectually spiritual way, like I could explain why all of my fears are totally insane. I can explain why it's irrational. If someone came to me, I could coach them as to why they shouldn't have those thoughts and feelings and fears. And yet, I still don't have the protection against the fear. So, this may be the last time you see me for free. No, I'm just kidding. That's not true. So if you see me on the street, feel free to tuck a dollar in my waistband. I also accept hugs as a form of payment. I also appreciate just knowing that we are sharing this path together and that you are doing your thing and I'm doing my thing. And if you're doing your thing and you need support in some way, ask me. One, I would love to help. And two, maybe it'll inspire me to do the same. Thank you. I love you.